Good evening, friends. Let's begin with a prayer. Divine Mother, Heavenly Father, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, our beloved Guru, Paramhansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, humbly we bow at thy feet. Teach us to live in ever more perfect attunement with thee. Help us to hear thy wisdom and guidance, to live in the spirit of brotherhood and love with all. Help us to train our hearts and minds to be ever reflecting on thy guidance, thy love, thy joy. Help us to reason, to will, and to act in attunement with thee. Om, peace. Amen. Welcome to our three-week series on willpower, energy and magnetism, and devotion, cultivating dynamic attunement. I was reflecting on the title of the course a few days ago when I started to think about what to say tonight and what the topic would be of willpower. And I was struck by the term, I mean, I wrote the title, so it wasn't a surprise to me, but I was struck by the term dynamic again, and just reflecting on that and thinking about what that term means, cultivating dynamic attunement. Why dynamic? Why not just cultivating attunement? And we'll begin tonight by talking a little bit about what attunement is and what it means to be living in attunement, why we're seeking it, how we're seeking it, and then go through the course of this sort of scientific or mathematical equation, 1 + 2 = 3, where we have the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy, the greater the flow of energy, the greater the magnetism. And of course, when we're magnetizing the Guru's blessings, God's grace and God's blessings to us, then we're living in that state of open-heartedness and receptivity, which allows us to be flowing in a state of deeper devotion. So that's how we get our three-week series of willpower tonight, energy and magnetism next week, and ultimately devotion to cultivate this deeper attunement and this dynamic attunement. But to come back to that term, dynamic, you know, the first thing that I thought about was the fact that on this path that Yogananda has brought to the West in terms of self-realization and yoga here in the West, everything that we do is about applying our own willpower and energy to our spiritual growth. It is a very active and dynamic path. There's not a lot of passivity in what we do. Everything that we hope and seek, hope for and seek as we are diving deeper into our own spiritual growth, as we are attuning ourselves more deeply to the divine, is about the energy and the magnetism that we're bringing to it. So cultivating dynamic attunement, it harkens back to this seedling of active dynamic energy that we have to bring to everything that we do. Nothing on our spiritual path is just given to us. We have to work and to strive for it. And that's not because it's hiding. You know, last week, the Sunday service reading for in the Ananda cycle was, does God hide the truth? And it's not that God is hiding from us, and that we have, and that's why we can't just wait back and passively receive it. God is everywhere, and that's where we'll begin tonight. But we have to raise our energy and raise our consciousness in order to meet it, that attunement, in order to resonate with that vibration of divine truth. And that takes every ounce of effort that we have, because the world is always drawing us out in different directions. And so that dynamic energy, again, it's about bringing everything that we have joyfully to that place of knowing that in each moment, the divine is present if we are able to raise our energy and awareness in order to seek him, to serve him, to love him, to worship him. which is where we're going to begin with our chant tonight of How Shall I Love Thee? So it poses that question, how shall I love thee, Lord my God, with every breath I breathe? We're offering that dynamic energy into the divine. We're offering everything we are. How shall I love thee? Asking that question, waiting for the response. And I love the verbs that we have here. How shall I love thee? How shall I seek thee? How shall I serve thee? How shall I worship thee? If we were to just spend the rest of the evening reflecting on these four verbs and what they mean, what does it mean to truly love the divine? What has to happen in our own hearts and in our own mind, our intellect, our energy, our willpower, in order to truly and purely love the divine without that tug and pull of Maya, of our karma, bringing us out into the world? How shall I love thee? With every breath I breathe, with that same ease and willingness with which we offer our breath into that cycle of breathing in and breathing out. That's how we need to love the divine, with every breath that we breathe, with that same immediacy, with that same energy, with that same constant application of love and willingness. And again, the same with seeking. Comes back to that question that was posed last week, does God hide the truth? And the answer ultimately was no, but with our consciousness being loaded down with the world, sometimes we can't find him. Sometimes we can't find the divine because we're thinking about too many other things. So taking this moment to relax into the breath, to listen to and watch the breath, and to ask that question, how shall I seek thee? You're right there, hiding just behind my next thought, my next fleeting desire or whim. There's the divine. How shall I serve thee? Opening our heart, now offering to it, becoming more dynamic, more involved, and ultimately worshiping thee. How shall I love thee, seek thee, serve thee, worship thee with every breath I breathe? And the second part of the chant, just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desire. This is where we begin to resonate with our topic tonight of willpower. Because what is willpower? Willpower is the directional force of our thoughts and our desires, our longings. Those things that we are applying our willpower to are the things that are tugging on our heartstrings. What we ultimately want that willpower to be tugging on is our need for God, our love for God. Just like we hear, how should we love God? I'm forgetting the origin of the story. But a sage says, when a disciple asks his guru this question or a sadhu this question, he responds, when you're being held underwater, gasping for that last breath, wanting nothing but that final, nothing but that breath of air, when you want God as much as you want that breath of air, then you'll find him. And so this idea of our willpower and the direction of our heart's energy being pulled out into the world by all of these forces of delusion that we have, how do we offer that in? Through our seeking, our love, our service, our worship. Just as a fire may burn a whole forest, burn to the root my desire. This is where we'll come back to tonight. Where is our heart directing its energy? Where is our mind directing its energy? Because this is what the foundation of willpower is. Our willpower is the fourth directional force of our energy, our intellect, our thoughts, our concentration, and our focus. How do we turn that energy in and up? How do we turn that directional force in and up so that we're not waking up and thinking about the list of things we need to do today, but instead we're thinking about the divine. We're thinking about serving, loving, worshiping, seeking. So before I say those verbs for a 12th or 13th time in a row, let's go ahead and join in with this chant.
Thank you.
You know, this chant really is a perfect example of, or just a really sweet and perfect embodiment of what attunement means. So to begin where we're going to end, which is this conversation each week, how do we use these tools, this scientific, this mathematical equation, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy, the greater the flow of energy, the greater the magnetism. In Raja Yoga, in the chapter on energy and magnetism, Swami Kriyananda says about this statement, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. He says, memorize this, repeat it to yourself many times, emblazon it in your mind. He goes on to say, this very phrase will revolutionize your life. That is a huge promise for each one of us. And in the process of applying willpower, our energy, our desire, our concentration, all being focused in that direction, again, that directional force that we've been talking about. So when that willpower and that concentration is focused in the direction that we want it to be, we're magnetizing the energy, we're bringing the energy and the effort to it, which brings the magnetism, which ultimately opens our heart to the receptivity. In Raja Yoga, Swami Kriyananda lays out these three chapters, first energy, then magnetism, and then the guru. Because of course, what is it ultimately that we are trying to magnetize? It's the presence of divinity. It's the presence of the divine in the form of our teacher, in the form of God's grace. And it seems like such an easy thing on a superficial level for us to say, we're here to attune ourselves to the divine. Because the divine is everywhere. The divine is permeating every particle of creation. In the book Conversations from Yogananda, one of my favorite conversations is number 32. And it talks about, Master talks about this exact topic. He says, the universe, he once commented, is teeming with life. God consciousness is at the heart of every atom. Ever seeking to express itself outwardly, all life gradually evolves toward outward expression. And he goes on to talk about and to say, materialistic science believes that life appears only by accident, out of mere combination of chemicals. Spiritual science, however, discovered long ago that at the heart of everything dwells the infinite consciousness. So, of course, recognizing that fact and being able to have faith and to trust and to experience and know that to be true, that God is at the center of every single particle of creation, that divine consciousness is teeming at the center of every atom. What attunement is for each one of us is that ability, that effort, and the energy that we bring in order to vibrate in harmony, in order to resonate with that divine consciousness that exists at the heart of every atom. It's the belief and the understanding, and then hopefully the true faith in the experience of knowing that God is present in the center of every experience that we have, that everything in the material world is made up of that divine consciousness. Nothing can happen outside of that expression of the divine. And when we are striving with our energy, our willpower, and our efforts toward harmonizing with that truth, toward harmonizing with that consciousness, then we're beginning to live more in tune with the laws of the divine, with the divine laws of the universe. And when we can live in that flow and in tune with that flow of divinity, then we are able to master our own thoughts, desires, ego, consciousness. We're able to, which is where we're ultimately all headed, to that place where we can say we are self-realized, that we have mastered the understanding that we are not this body of thoughts and beliefs and even our physical being, that at the very center of everything exists the divine. And when I was thinking about what that means and why it is that we can't just know it to be true, that's why I use the word belief versus faith, because these two terms have such, they're siblings of each other, but the belief is the trust in something. When I believe something, I have trust in it. And maybe it's something that I know to be true. So I can say, I believe that God is at the center of everything. What's the difference between saying I believe and I have faith? Faith is through our own application of these practices of meditation, of prayer, of chanting, of whatever it is, the tools and techniques that we can use to bring us into resonance with that divine consciousness, into attunement with that divine. Faith is the absolute reassurance in knowing, based on our own experience, so that we can walk forward with something and know in that realm of we are protected and uplifted by that faith. Not protected necessarily from the forces of the world and our karma, but protected in our heart and in our mind and in that state of consciousness. When we are existing in that flow of attunement with the divine and in that flow of having perfect faith, or having, let me just say, not perfect faith, but having faith in the fact that the divine is everywhere and we are, and nothing is happening outside of that consciousness, then no matter what happens, we can embrace it with that warrior spirit and stand up and say, I'm here to receive this gift. Swami Kriyananda used to say, imagine everything that is given to you in your life is a gift given to you specifically for you with all the love and joy in the world from the divine. So whether that's a new baby in your life, a new child that you're holding close to your heart and that you're overwhelmed with joy and that you're feeling all of that love for, or whether it's an illness that's come to you or to somebody that you love, that no matter what the circumstance is, earning a new job or receiving a promotion in a job that you love, losing your job, whatever it may be, each one of these circumstances is perfectly gift-wrapped and packaged gift that was given to you for your own spiritual growth. This is the application of understanding, of acknowledging and living in perfect in faith that the divine is at the center of every single thing. But we have to bring our energy to it. I can't just sit back passively and say, well, I guess everything is the divine, so whatever's happening is supposed to happen, and that's that, right? I mean, that's not going to get us anywhere. That attitude doesn't help us to grow. We have to bring that willpower and that willingness to it, because divine grace is ever flowing toward us. But grace, you know, I grew up always hearing the term grace has descended, and that implies a level of passivity, that there's not much you can do, that grace kind of just decides. I don't know if any of you have know who Oprah Winfrey is, but she used to have this once a year, something. It was like Oprah's favorite things, and she would just give away a bunch of things to people in the audiences, all the things that she loved. And it used to be kind of the idea of you get a car and you get a car and you get a car. And there's sort of this idea or this understanding implication in the term grace has descended, that we don't really get a say in that, that the divine is up there deciding and choosing who's gonna be lucky today, who's going to feel divine grace today. You get some grace and you get some grace. But of course, that's not how it actually works. Divine grace is ever present. It's impersonal. Swami Kriyananda describes divine grace. He uses the analogy of sunlight shining impersonally on a building, that it's just there and it is always present, much like we heard in the reading from Conversations with Yogananda, where Yogananda says, every atom of creation is teeming with divine consciousness. That divine grace, our world is teeming with that divine grace. It's always present. And we don't just sit back passively and wait for it to come to us. We raise our energy in order to receive it, in order to feel it. I used the example, I was talking about grace somewhere last week. I can't remember now where, but I used the example. I was going through a situation in my life, I guess in a sense I still am, but I was frustrated with a decision that somebody had made, and I spent a few days pretty much just sulking around. I would kind of tell myself in each of my meditations that I had, I was just sort of arguing at God, well, this is why it's not fair, and this is what I think should have happened, and this is why I think it would have been what's right for me, you know, trying to make my argument like a lawyer, getting all of my papers in order and explaining to the divine why what happened wasn't the right thing to happen. And I spent a few days, like I said, just sort of sulking around on my own, fighting with myself, complaining about it, feeling frustrated and angry. And then one morning I woke up, on Friday morning I woke up and thought, well, this isn't helping you. Oh, that's where I shared this in my Friday morning satsang. So if you listened to that, you get to hear the story again. On Friday morning, I woke up and I thought, well, this isn't helping you at all. This isn't serving you. Where have you gotten with it? Why don't we try changing our energy, changing our mind? So why don't I try refocusing where my directional force of energy is going? Where am I applying my will and my concentration? I'd spent 3 days giving a lot of willpower and energy to being angry and upset. I spent a lot of hours in meditation making my case and my argument. And none of it was working. None of it was helping me to shift my own vibration, to accept willingly what was happening, to have faith that the divine, that force of divinity knew, that divine consciousness knew what was right for me, that God knew what was right for me, and that the decision that had been made, even if it was hurtful to me, even if it was something that upset me and hurt me, that it was the right decision for me, because I was going to learn something from it. Just like that example that I used, that was my gift-wrapped boxed or present that the divine was handing to me in that moment. And it wasn't a happy one in the sense that it didn't uplift me in that moment, but it gave me that opportunity after 3 days of sulking around to say, well, how are you going to fix it? What are you going to do in this particular moment? And so I brought the yamas and the niyamas into my meditation, and I went down the list and I said, okay, the first yama is ahimsa, nonviolence. Let's reflect on all the ways that you are being violent in this moment. And that violence was manifesting in the form of my anger, not just my anger at the circumstance and just sort of throwing that anger out into the universe and I'm angry and somebody should know. There's violence involved in that. But I was also, even though this is what I was saying on Friday, it was an interesting circumstance because I agreed with the choice that was made. I knew it was the right choice, but it still hurt my feelings. And that's what I was reacting to. So I also said, well, you know, this angry, even though it's not directed at the person who made that decision, it's hurtful and it's harmful to that person. So how can we correct that? How can we actually practice nonviolence in this moment? And again, going down the list, non-lying, and moving on really through all of the yamas and niyamas. And I just spent that meditation, instead of making my case in point as to why I felt that I had been wronged and why the universe should hear that I think things should be different, I sat with the yamas and niyamas. I sat with those tools, those techniques, those characteristics that we have. The yamas and niyamas are, when applied in a setting like that, they are those character traits and those values that we can use to bring ourselves more wholly back to our true nature, back to our true self. We get caught up in the vrittis and the whirlpools of energy. I got caught up in my heart's emotion and the hurt that I felt in that experience. And I went off on that tangent. But when I was able to practice ahimsa and reflect on ahimsa, that whirlpool of, but you are angry and you've been wronged, it has to come right back in. Let's take that nonviolence and let's bring that back into our center. Let's bring that back into our core and let's practice this in a way that is meaningful, that's going to help us redirect the energy so it's not flowing out into this little whirlpool of you've been wronged and somebody should hear it, to let's practice nonviolence. Let's move that energy up through the heart and up to the divine. Divine Mother, help me to be less violent in this circumstance, whatever that may be. And again, in this case, it was just sort of the casting of that anger and that frustration out. Just because I've been hurt doesn't mean that I have to give my energy, my willpower to that. I was spending all of my willpower, I was giving all of my concentration and my focus to feeling angry. And in the midst of that one meditation, what I was able to do was to redirect the energy to those places of stillness that exist. Just like we read in the conversation that I shared with you, the divine is present in every single moment and experience, which means that that place of stillness, that place of calmness, of perfect joy, it exists in the midst of every single circumstance in our life. And it's up to us to bring our concentration and our efforts and our willpower to those circumstances, even when it's hard, to redirect it back. which is exactly what was happening for me on Friday morning. And again, it doesn't mean that the situation was solved. When I left that meditation, I could still feel that I was irked and I was upset and I was a little bit hurt by the decision that was made. But I was able to approach it from that place of acceptance, from that place of having faith in the divine and having faith in the divine plan that was being laid out for me in that moment. And I was able to redirect that energy because I shifted my willpower. I actively made the decision to say, no, we are not spending our time and our energy focused out here. We're bringing that energy in and we are changing our minds. Our being my ego and me. I guess that's who I was talking to in that moment. And this power, it exists for each one of us in every single moment. We have that opportunity to say, no, no more. I will not give my energy. I will not direct my concentration outward to that circumstance, to that emotion, to that feeling. I will shift it and I will turn in and up. Because willpower is, this is why it begins, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. It's the first step because it is the directional flow. It's where our effort and our focus is going. Whatever we put our willpower to, we are usually able to accomplish that in one form or another. If we really, really want to try at something, then we can do it. You know, an example of that. I don't consider myself to be an extremely techie person, but I am part of my life, I'm a high school English teacher. And so we are preparing for the beginning of the school year. I'm just gonna take a sip of water. As we are preparing for the beginning of the school year, which is starting next week for me, obviously with the current situation and COVID-19, we're starting completely remotely. So there is a lot that I needed to learn in terms of being able to create a classroom community and a classroom environment with my students remotely so that we're not together. You know, and as a yogi, and somebody who is practiced in feeling out energies and harmonizing and attuning to energies. I rely on that a lot, especially in the first couple weeks of school, of being together in the same room with the students so that we can feel each other out. And so I was reflecting on this the other day and then just playing around with all of these different new tech apps and gadgets and all of the things that we're being bombarded with every day of, oh, try this app or try that thing or use this or use that. And one of the things that a lot of teachers have been using is what's called, it's a new thing now, it's called a Bitmoji classroom. So a Bitmoji is like a little character of yourself that people send around via text or via email. And they put them in different scenes. And so it's this little caricature of yourself. And some wonderful techie teacher had the idea to create an interactive Bitmoji classroom. And so I decided that what I would do, instead of creating an interactive classroom, I would create a Bitmoji home for myself and an About Me page. So I spent, over the last couple of days, I probably spent about 12 hours on this Bitmoji classroom presentation. And I found this, I was using someone's blog to help me guide the process. And so they were showing me all these blog websites that you could use to remove backgrounds and to change things around so I could take a picture and remove the background out of it. And I created all these clickable links. So when you clicked on, you know, a picture of a book that I was holding, it took you to a page of my favorite book, and I recorded myself talking about why it was my favorite book, or I used a few different books. And essentially, I created this whole interactive world where students could engage by clicking on different things in an image of my living room that would tell them more about me, about my family, my friends, my life as a yoga and meditation teacher, and how that feeds the things I do at school, all of this. And I sort of emerged from my 12-hour session, although it happened over the course of 2 days, so it wasn't 12 hours straight, but I emerged from this 12 hours of just being completely consumed in this project. I was on some meetings for my school, you know, welcome back meetings and professional development. And somebody asked me a question at the end of the meeting, and I just went, huh? And they said, "Are you with us?" And I said, "No, I've been in this Bitmoji world the whole time that I was on this meeting. It was like nothing else existed for me for these hours that I was focused on it." And I emerged from that when the project was done and it's ready to share with my students. And it struck me how deeply my concentration had been focused in that. It was almost like I emerged and I looked around in my living room and it was messy, and I'm not a very messy person. And you know, there were a couple of cups stacked up from the water glasses that I had used, and just things that I don't normally leave around my house were out. And it just struck me by how intensely my willpower and my concentration had been so deep into this project that everything else just sort of floated away. This is the power, you know, I'm telling you the story. I was using it for a Bitmoji classroom because we live in the world and we sometimes get caught up in these things. But I wish I could say to you that it was a 12-hour meditation where I was deeply immersed in the divine and nothing else existed for me but that divine communion, though that will come when it's time. But it struck me, just that is the power of, that is the potential and the power that we hold, that we can harness. Our will is such a strong tool. It's a spiritual quality. Willpower and willingness is a spiritual quality. And where we direct it has so much, what's the word? It defines so much of what happens for us in the world. It defines so much of where we go in the world, whether we're going out into the world and getting drawn out into those vrittis of feeling and desires and thoughts, or whether we can stay harnessed, impartial, and still and calm in those moments. Wherever we're directing that willpower, it takes us there almost immediately. You know, another example of this, let me say it this way. We were talking about divine grace and this idea that divine grace is everywhere. What's the sibling or what's the opposite pull of divine grace? If divine grace, if God's grace is everywhere waiting to uplift us and to draw us into that consciousness, then the opposing force of that is, of course, the force of Maya, the force that's pulling us out, always ready and willing to jump in on us, to take hold of us, and to pull us out into the world. And this is that battlefield of life that we're constantly being drawn between. Our heart and our spirit know the truth and always want to be pulled up into that divine grace. But there comes Maya. And because of our karma, because of all of this stored energy that we have in our spiritual spine, sometimes Maya doesn't have to work as hard as divine grace does, right? Or it's easier for us to fall into, let me rephrase the way I would say that. It's easier for us to kind of get hooked onto Maya than it is for us to raise our energy to attune ourselves to that magnetic pull of divine grace. Because Maya doesn't have to work as hard, you know? For example, like Maya just has to show us a picture of something. It just has to flash a commercial across the screen and all of a sudden we go, ooh, that's interesting. I wonder what that's about. You know, if I asked you right now to sing me a jingle from an early 2000s commercial, I bet half of you listening could come up with one. You know, it's these things, they just get caught in our mind and they draw us out into it. And there's Maya and it just shows you a little something and all of a sudden you go, that's interesting. And you're not quite there yet, right? What is the, I think the example Swami Kriyananda uses is, first you can look and you can say, oh, there's a horse. And you're establishing your ego and you're establishing your separateness. It would be nice to say I'm one with the horse, but that's the first step. You say, oh, there's a horse. Then the next step is you say, there's my horse. And he tells us you're not caught yet. Not even when you say there's my horse, because we can have things that we can hold in our lives that we don't feel attached to. I can say this is my book that I've read, but knowing that even though I'm calling it mine, I can give it back to the divine if it gets taken away from me, that I'll still be whole. And so you can say, even when you say there's my horse, we're not caught. The moment that we get caught is when we say, I love my horse. Then all of a sudden your heart is engaged in it. And Maya just has to flash that little something at you and you go, ooh, and you're not caught yet. But then your mind just starts to think about it and maybe gets pulled out a little bit more. Or maybe you start to feel, I wonder what that would be like. Here, I'll give you an example. My friend showed me this app. There's this sunglass. I'm sure most of you will know the sunglasses. Ray-Bans is a brand of sunglasses. And my friend was telling me the other day that they have a fun little tool on their website where you can hold up, you share your camera capabilities with it, and you can click on a pair of sunglasses and you hold your camera up to it and it puts the sunglasses on you. So you can essentially try on sunglasses over the phone. And so she and I were just having a little satsang digitally, and we were just having fun just trying on different sunglasses and just playing around and, you know, being silly. And, you know, I would say, try these on. And then she would say, will you try those on? And we were picking sunglasses for each other. And then I found this pair and we were just joking, like I said, just having fun. And then all of a sudden she said, try these on. And I was trying them on and looking at them. And I thought, ooh, those are nice. And I don't need new sunglasses. I have more than enough pairs of sunglasses. But then I started thinking, those are really nice sunglasses. And then the next day, kind of popped back into my head, and there was that little thought, remember those sunglasses that you tried on yesterday? Those were really nice. And the next day, maybe I need those sunglasses. Ultimately, I was strong enough not to buy the sunglasses. But it was, you know, it's just an example of that. All it has to be was a little game, and then all of a sudden, I like those sunglasses. Maybe I need those sunglasses. And then we're starting to think about those sunglasses. And maybe we have to put in some extra willpower and concentration in order to make the money to buy those new sunglasses. So now our energy and our effort and our willpower are getting involved in order to buy those sunglasses, and on and on and on. And I'm using an example of the sunglasses, which is trivial, but how often do we get caught like that? Maya just flips a little image of something and all of a sudden, there we go, there we are, and we're drawn off into that. You know, you see an image of a shiny new car, either on a commercial or a magazine ad, or you see someone driving that car and you think, that's a nice lifestyle. That car embodies the lifestyle that I want. That car embodies the person that I want to be. I need that car. And then all of a sudden you're set off on a lifetime tangent of trying to become that person that you saw in that car driving past. And there we go, the lifetime we've just left, all of that energy and willpower that we could have focused on the divine, it just gets tangentially pulled off. And if we're lucky, we maybe come back. And we do this every day. We ebb and we flow because the nature of our reality is dualistic and Maya is there. Just as divine grace is always waiting to lift us up, if we're willing to attune ourselves to it, to practice those skills that will help to refine the subtle energies in our astral spine, to bring us into attunement with that, where there's Maya, which is ready to pull us in that other direction. And the difference between faith and belief, it's that instant gratification. We believe that that little pinprick of Maya is going to bring us happiness. And we feel good for the moment that we do it. If I bought those sunglasses and put them on, they come in the mail, I have them and I put them on, I feel good for a day or so, maybe a year if I'm lucky. Every time I put them on, I really like these sunglasses, right? And we believe that that is the happiness that's going to sustain us because it's that jolt up. Yep, I feel great right now. But what happens when the wave rises? It has to fall back down. Whereas we have divine grace, that ability to pull us up into that higher consciousness, to attune us to that stillness that is Satchitananda, ever-existent, ever-new, ever-conscious bliss. So we can have those ebbs and flows of Maya, which so quickly pull us down, or we can always be bringing our energy and our attunement back into that place of stillness, of oneness, of knowing our true nature. And this is where our willpower comes in. Where will you direct your energy? How often can we correct ourselves when that directional flow takes us out into a tangential place? Just like the example that I used earlier tonight about what was happening for me last week. It took me 3 days to recognize that my willpower was being directed down and out into my feeling nature. And it took that long because I was angry, and it felt good to be angry in those moments. Not in the sense that it feels good to be angry, but that gratification that was coming, I believed that if I could get my argument clear enough, if I could just convince, I don't even know who because I wasn't talking to anybody, but if I could just convince that one person that I was right to feel hurt, that I was justified to feel hurt, that my emotions that I was feeling and my feelings were all justified, then maybe I would feel a whole lot better. But it wasn't until that practice of attunement, that practice of redirecting my willpower in and up, that I was able to come back to that place of calmness, of stillness, of knowing and recognizing the truth, of having faith in that truth. And this is, of course, what is so vitally important to us. You know, I was thinking about it just in the sense of the battlefield of life and of Arjuna, and how the Bhagavad Gita begins, the battle of Kurukshetra, and he throws down his bow to Krishna, who's telling him, you must fight. And he throws down his bow and arrows, and he says, I can't fight, I won't fight. And Krishna says to him, you must pick up your bow and fight. This is it, it's inevitable. This is the pull. It's that battlefield of the duality of Maya and divine grace. Which side are we going to choose? And the first, I don't like the word weapon, but I'm going to use the word weapon. The first tool that we have that we can use, one of those foundational tools that we can use, is just to redirect. It's on a hinge. Where is my willpower directing my concentration? You know, and it's so easy to get caught up in that trap. I'll tell you one more story and then we'll move on to how do we overcome that that pull, and how do we, what is it really that willpower is allowing us to direct? How do we redirect our desires? You know, as I said to you, the school year for me is starting, and so my mind is just abuzz with so many things that are happening. And this morning, I haven't had, I've had just meetings from, you know, 8 in the morning until 4 at night, just on the computer all day long. And, you know, I could just feel myself being a little bit scattered as a result of it. So this morning, I woke up a little bit earlier than usual, and I decided that I was going to have a longer meditation, that I felt like I just needed to really feel that recentering and just really give some time to not being on a screen, to just being in that calmness and that stillness. And so I woke up and I energized, and then I went and sat down in my at my meditation pillow. And I couldn't even, I mean, I couldn't have even gotten through the prayer. It was just like, Divine Mother, Heavenly Father, oh, you have to think of icebreakers. What icebreakers would be fun to play with your students on Zoom? No, 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 let's come back and try again. Divine Mother, Heavenly Father, well, you have to, and it was just one thing after another, and I found my mind just ping-ponging all throughout this long, this time that I'd set aside for a longer meditation. And I would do a couple Kriya breaths, and then there goes my mind again, and it was just flittering out everywhere. And one of the things that I decided to do, rather than fight that, was to just laugh at it and embrace it and accept it as my reality right now. My mind is abuzz. There's a lot of things on the to-do list. And so I just started planning with Divine Mother. And so instead of saying, nope, redirect, come back, I would just say, all right, Divine Mother, we're going to talk about icebreakers. How do we create icebreakers on Zoom or on an electronic platform that are going to be really uplifting for the students? How do I help them to feel your energy, to feel your upliftment? And I started to plan these events and these little things that I have to do that were so busy, you know, buzzing in my mind. I just started to plan them with Divine Mother, and I just asked for not only her presence, but for her inspiration, so that whatever I was creating in that busy, busy body mind would be something that would be a reflection of the divine. And it wasn't a perfectly still and deep meditation, but it was a meditation where I left feeling, or it was a time where I was able to sort of leave that longer time that I'd set aside, really feeling close to Divine Mother and feeling in tune with that vibration and with that energy. So I was able to work with the energy that was happening and accept it, embrace it, and just invite the divine in with me. And that process was, in its own way, just as uplifting as if I had been able to do what I really wanted to do, which was to set aside everything and just be still and just feel that deep attunement. Because what is it that we're ultimately trying to feel? It's that attunement, whether it comes through our activity, which is why Yogananda could pray. I'm going to come back and finish that sentence. But this is why Yogananda has said to us, one of the highest prayers that we can pray is, I will reason, I will, and I will act, but guide thou my reason, will, and activity toward the highest good in all. So whether I was in a state of deep meditation and able to let go of all of the busy buzzing, the buzzing in my mind, or whether I invited the divine into that process, the end goal was the same, to feel the closeness with the divine, to feel that energy of the divine, to feel inspired by the divine and share that consciousness with everything and everyone. And so to be able to leave that knowing that now I have some ideas in my mind that are going to bring that divine consciousness into my classroom for the next couple of weeks, in certain ways that's just as inspiring. In certain ways it's going to, who knows who it's going to uplift or who it's going to help. And so it's this idea of cooperation, of accepting, of not being hard on ourselves, but always redirecting our willingness and our concentration to the divine in whatever it is that we're doing. To always say and to seek that understanding and that faith that everything that happens is a reflection of divine consciousness, and therefore, if I am willing and open to be a tool or a channel for that consciousness, then the divine can act through me and work through me. And this is, of course, attunement. This is how we cultivate dynamic attunement. And again, coming back to that term dynamic, it's all about it's all about the activity that we're able to bring. It's all about being active and being present and being a participant in our spiritual growth, not about passivity. It's not about sitting back and saying, when will divine grace descend on me? Saying, how can I act today in a way that's going to align myself or bring myself ever closer to that ray of inspiration, that ray of divinity. And this is reflected in every moment. You know, I was just thinking about, I have a little 1.5-year-old niece, and I've been FaceTiming a little bit more with her because I just don't want her to forget me. I want her to recognize me and to know my face. And so I get on FaceTime with her maybe once a week and just say hi and play with her and sing to her. And the other day I was on FaceTime with her, and she was playing a game with a little, she had like this little, essentially she had little blocks that were in different shapes, and she was trying to put them, you have to put them into the right slot in order to get them to go through. And I kept saying, Lauren, Lauren, Lauren. But she was so focused and so, you know, she couldn't quite get, she's still young enough that she doesn't quite understand shapes. So she was trying, but she wasn't quite getting it. But it was, again, this idea, there was nothing else registered. I would sing her her favorite songs, I would ask her questions, and she was only focused on this little game and this little toy, and nothing else mattered. And her, in her activity, in her energy, in her willpower, everything was directed right to that little game. That's what we want to be. We want to be just like that for the divine, so that no matter what we're doing outwardly in the world, inwardly our concentration and our focus is always on serving that divine consciousness. There's a story from the Bible. It's from one of the readings that we do on Sundays here. I forget which one, which reading it is or which week it is now. But it's a story that takes place in the Garden of Gethsemane on the night before Jesus Christ is crucified. And he is speaking to the divine, and he's saying, you know, let this cup pass if it might, essentially. So saying to the divine, you know, I accept your will. I accept whatever it is that you are asking me to do. And he, of course, knew what was coming. His disciples didn't yet know. And he comes to the Garden of Gethsemane, and he sees his disciples asleep, and he wakes Peter, and he says, won't you sit up? Won't you pray with me and sit up and watch with me? And Peter's response is, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And Jesus comes back later, and he sees that his disciples are asleep again. And that line, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, I thought about how often we get caught up in those traps as well, where we can say it sort of like, I believe it was Asha, who was the first person that I ever heard say this to the chant, I want only thee, Lord. She, in her mind, she was saying, I can't quite say I want only thee, Lord. I have to say, I want to want only thee, Lord. It's this idea that we, as spiritual seekers and as yogis, as people practicing on a path, on whatever your spiritual path may be, the goal is to feel that divine consciousness and to live in attunement with divine consciousness. And our spirit and our soul are so eager to do that, and they know what is right. And that's what I was thinking about when I thought of Peter's statement, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, meaning that he couldn't sit up, that he wanted to sleep and he fell back asleep. And it's a trap that we can fall into, because as we were talking about the difference between grace and Maya and how they're both just equally waiting for us to be drawn in, that's the battlefield, that's picking up our bow and saying we must fight. We can't just sit back and say, I'm not fighting. We have to be present. We have to bring our energy and our willingness into it, because it's here. That battle of duality exists, and Maya is ever waiting, and divine grace is ever present. And it's our choice in those moments. Where will we hinge our directional force? Where will my concentration go in each of these moments? And when I read the second part of that line where he says, but the flesh is weak, I was thinking about how we as spiritual seekers, and especially those of us who know the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, how we can strengthen the flesh, how it is that we can strengthen the mind, the heart, to listen to that soul call and that yearning, to know that deep within us, the willingness to love only God, to want only God, to serve only God, to seek, to serve, to love, to worship, coming back to our chant that we sang this morning, that reality exists for us, but we get drawn out into the world. And so what do we have in order to strengthen that the flesh is weak? What do we have in order to strengthen that metaphor of the flesh, which sometimes is the body? We could wake up even yesterday morning, I needed to be somewhere at 7 o'clock in the morning. And so I set my alarm early enough that I could get up and meditate. And my alarm went off and I kind of turned over and I looked at it. And I just said to God, 10 more minutes. And then my snooze was on for 10 minutes or 9 minutes, whatever the standard is. And then it went off again and it said 10 more minutes. And then, so now 20 minutes had gone by. And then I found myself the third time the alarm went off, I said to Divine Mother, I said, I promise if we can sleep for another hour right now instead of meditating, as soon as I get back from where I need to be, we'll meditate. I promise we'll meditate. And I laid in bed for another 2 minutes and I said, you get up right now, get out of bed. You know. And so that's just that example of the flesh is weak. Sometimes it is that our bodies are just tired and we don't want to sit any longer. Sometimes it is that our emotions and our heart are drawing us out in different directions, whatever it may be. What can we do in order to strengthen that resolve so that we can continue with perseverance, with steadfast perseverance, to focus our willpower on seeking, serving, loving, worshiping the divine? And it always comes back to the tools and the techniques that we have. Our meditation practice, Hung Sa, the Om technique, Kriya, all of these things, chanting, prayer, energization, all of the techniques and the tools that we have. You know, if you just open up any one of Paramahansa Yogananda's books or Swami Kriyananda's books, there's another technique, attitude, habit, affirmation, chant, song that you can sing, that you can practice, that you can do in order to raise your energy and bring yourself back into that flow. Because, of course, we'll talk about energy a little bit more next week, but we know what Yogananda said, there is more energy, there's enough energy in 1 gram of your flesh to light the city of Chicago for a week. That's what he said back in the 20s and 30s. And we are that infinite energy, and that willingness is all that it takes in order to shift that energy up, to find the energy, to continue to moving forward, to wake up a little bit earlier, to sit a little bit longer. And these techniques and these tools, what they do is they overpower the mind. They overpower those vrittis that are pulling us out into each of these directions. The Maya that clamps onto the heart and says, hey, don't you want to look at those sunglasses again? No. I want to sit down and meditate. I don't need those sunglasses. I don't need that new job. I don't need the promotion. I don't need the new car. I don't need anything to be different. I just want to love the divine, to serve the divine. And it's that willingness, it's the practice of that, of drawing the energy up, of that helps us to get out of the mind and to overpower that cycle. Because if we were to sit down and just try and, you know, sort of eat up every single one of our individual thoughts, wants, needs, and desires, we couldn't get there on our own, because in each moment a new one pops up, right? Who knows, just by that one little desire that I had, which is now gone, even though I'm talking about it and may not seem like it, the desire is gone, I think. We'll find out soon. But even that one little desire that I had to wear those sunglasses or own those sunglasses just for a couple of days, who knows how much karma that's created, how many things that stirred up, the past lives where maybe it wasn't sunglasses, but it was something else that I really wanted and I didn't get, or that a lifestyle that was embodied or that I attributed to wearing those sunglasses, and all the lifetimes when I didn't get to be that or I thought I needed to. These waves of karma that just get awakened and come wafting up into our heart and start pulling us in all these different directions. If we just try and sit in them and use our mind to clip those strings, it would take us endless amounts of lifetimes. But we have the secret, because we have a guru who's always standing above us, holding that grace, drawing that energy up. We have teachers and exemplars from every spiritual path that we can practice who know what true oneness with the divine is, who are avatars, who are incarnations of divine manifestation. And they've come and they've told us what to do. In so many ways, Yogananda has given us advice on how to meditate, on what to eat, on how to wake up in the morning, on how to shower. He tells us to take cold showers. And there's now all sorts of, I was just watching a little YouTube video about this man. His name is leaving me, is leaving my mind right now, but they call him the Iceman, and he uses these breathing techniques. He trains people in these breathing techniques in pranayama, and then he takes them into, you know, freezing cold waters and talks about how it helps to stimulate the nervous system in a positive way. It helps to strengthen the heart. It helps to clear the mind so that the energy, so we can use energy and breath in order to overpower the mind and the nervous system so that we don't get in that water and say, this is freezing cold, I can't handle this. We are stronger than it because that life force is moving through us. We've invited it in. What does that sound like? Sounds a lot like the energization exercises. We have an incarnation, a manifestation of divine consciousness, which has brought to us these techniques and these tools, and we can use them. And as we use them, we get to strengthen our willpower, strengthen our resolve, so that when we're waking up and we're energizing every single morning, first thing that we do, no matter what else, first thing that we do, we get up and we energize, we feel that flow. We feel that energy building and rising in us. And maybe we still have days like I had the other day where I can say, oh, just 10 more minutes. But soon we find that happens a little bit less. And when we meditate longer and we do that extra round of Kriya, even though we know we have a meeting starting in 1 hour and you have to get your laundry done and have some breakfast and all these other things, I'm going to sit just a little bit longer and do one more round of Kriya, sit a little bit longer in that stillness at the end of my meditation. The more that we can practice these techniques, the stronger our willpower becomes and our resolve becomes. And pretty soon, that directional pull and the ebb and flow and the up and down of being tugged in all these different directions, it becomes less strong. So maybe it just becomes a little jerk. So instead of a big wave that's just going to, overpower us and knock us down, it's just a little bit of that wishy-washy back and forth in the water. The waters become a little bit calmer and we're not getting knocked off our feet every time we see a new pair of sunglasses or every time someone makes a decision that hurts us. Instead, we can say, wow, this hurts a little bit, or wow, those are nice sunglasses, but I know what I want. I know what I need. I know where my energy is focused. Because what is willpower but the directional pull of our desires? So our willpower, where we are putting our concentration and our energy, is a direct reflection of our desires. Where our energy goes is where our heart is going. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Where our attention is going eventually energy, which we'll get to next week. But where we're putting our attention, our concentration, our willpower and willingness is a reflection of where our heart's desire is. Somebody who wants to be extremely successful in the world can do it by putting out the energy and the willpower to do so. Now, it also takes karma, and it also involves all of these other things. You know, it's not just your story isn't told just by one little thing. But if you put your willingness and your concentration into it, it will begin to happen for us. We can magnetize success in that way. This is what Swami Kriyananda talks about in the lessons of material success through yogic principles, that these are spiritual principles at their foundation. And the laws that apply to the divine laws that apply in our spiritual world, in the energetic world, they also manifest in the material world. And so we know this to be true. So where do we want our attention, our energy, our desire going? Where do we want our heart to be pulling? It's always going to tug on us until we are self-realized, because the very nature of this world is dualistic. And as we said, this pull that's happening between the upliftment of into divine grace, into attunement with divine grace, and that tug of Maya into the instant gratifications and happiness that can come from whatever that vritti is that we're getting stuck in, it's always there. We have to pick up our bow and we have to fight. So we're always going to be knocked back and forth in those waves until we can reach that place of equanimity, that place of acceptance and calmness and stillness. But we get to make the choice. Where is my desire and my energy focused? Where is my heart truly set to be? I was talking with my friend Rose yesterday, or 2 days ago, I can't remember now, and she was telling me that she was starting to read a book about a group of children. There are several children in Medjugorje who have seen and are continuing to see visions of Mother Mary. She comes to them sometimes weekly. Sometimes monthly, there are different stories of people. And so she was telling me about this book that she had just started reading of a group of three young children who are still seeing visions of Mother Mary. And she said so sweetly, when you're in tune with the divine, when your heart's desires are focused on the divine, it almost becomes effortless. And she said, here were these three sweet little children who are just feeling all of that power of the divine because their love is so pure and their heart's desires were so pure that they just fall into that attunement naturally and in that flow. And this is where we're headed. We have to cultivate dynamic attunement because our heart gets tugged and pulled in all of these different directions. But what we're ultimately doing is, through all of our energy, all of our efforts, all of our willpower, bringing ourselves to that place of feeling the calmness of the heart, that one focused and one-pointed desire for God alone, that creates that ease of falling into, falling in love with the divine, so that everything that we do is an expression of that love. Everything we feel is an expression of that love. This is what it means to be moving through the world in attunement. When we are in love with God, when we are in love with the divine, then everything around us becomes an experience of that love. Everyone that we meet gets engulfed into that bubble of love. Every circumstance in our life, whether positive or negative, to the external eye, becomes an experience of love, of companionship, of camaraderie with the divine, of feeling the divine's presence. Just like that example that I used from this morning or yesterday morning, where I was having a busy meditation, and instead of fighting it, I can say, okay, this is exactly where we are, so come with me. Divine Mother, let's be in this together. Let's be busy together. Let's express your love in ways that, in whatever ways we can, for my students, for my friends, for my family, whomever it is that I'm meeting, whomever it is that I'm a part of. So when our willpower is focused on the desire to love God alone, when we can love, seek, serve, worship the divine with every breath that we breathe, then we're living in that attunement. And that attunement just flows naturally. This is the natural state of the heart. This is what we can use the tools and the techniques for. The Spirit is willing. The Spirit is always willing. That is your natural state. The Spirit is always seeking the divine. Your soul is hungry to know the divine. But the flesh is weak. There's all of those other little things that just get scattered out in front of us, and we pick them up one by one, and we hope and we expect and we know this is gonna bring me the happiness that I need, and we get just excited for just a moment, and we can raise that wave nice and high, and we can feel that gratification. But what we don't see, whether it's tomorrow, next year, next lifetime, is the crash that comes back down. Wherever we peak, we must come back down. But when we're living in love with the divine, when our heart is expressing a desire to know the divine more deeply and share the divine with all, and when that is what is animating every activity, every thought, every intention that we have in our lives, then we're in that state of equilibrium. The waves aren't crashing any longer, but we're just existing in the midst of it. So I thought what we would do to end this evening in a practice of that, Swami Kriyananda gave the advice, and this is one of my favorite things to do as I'm falling asleep. He gave the advice that every night you create a mental bonfire in your mind, and you just start casting things into the bonfire. And I used to begin, when I first started this practice years ago, I just started casting material things into the fire. What would it feel like if tomorrow my car were to be taken away? I don't even love my car necessarily, but I'm attached to the convenience of having a car. So I would practice, what did that mean? So your car is taken away, you can't drive anymore. You have to take the bus, you have to ride a bike, you have to walk. What is that like? Are you angry? Can you accept that? So I started with material things, and eventually I moved to people in my life that I love. Eventually I moved to qualities that I felt were core and central to the definition of who I am. What if I lost that sense of, like, for example, loyalty? I like to be a very loyal person. I like to, I am attached in a certain way to knowing that my friends can rely on that loyalty, that I'm knowing that my family can rely on that loyalty. So what does it look like to cast that into the fire? You don't have to be attached to that. That's not who you are. And so we can make these mental bonfires, and we can just, one by one in that process, sever those strings of our attachments to our definitions, to our conveniences, to the things that we have, to the people in our lives, to that which makes us who we believe we are. And when we do that every night, offering it into the divine, saying, I'm none of these things. Everything I have is an animistic, everything I am is animated through your divine flow, through your divine presence. And my willingness is to be an expression of that in every action, every thought, every experience, every intention. Then we are purifying the heart's desires. Then we're able to create those channels that can, just as I used the example earlier of using the yamas and niyamas to redirect my attention, my concentration, and my willpower, then we're able to redirect that energy and that willpower up through the heart, opening the heart in receptivity as a channel of receiving that divine light and offering it out into the world. So the last thing that we'll do here for just a few minutes and then we'll end is I'll light this our fire here. We're not going to have a fire ceremony, but this will be a mental image, and we'll just spend a few minutes. I'll start by just prompting and guiding you for a moment or two, and then we'll sit in stillness for just a minute or two and holding our attention at all of those things that we are able to cast into the fire, to let go of and to sever the attachments, beginning with the things that we can do freely. And then really, as we're building, just over the course of 3 or 4 minutes that we'll do this here, what are those things that are anchored in our self-definitions, that are anchored into our astral spine, that we can just begin to release and to let go of, knowing that it's just a practice, even if for the next 4 or 5 minutes we're completely letting go of that. We're just completely dropping it. Maybe we're going to have to pick it back up when those 4 minutes are over. But what does it feel like to just completely free the heart? So with all of our energy and our willpower and our focus, let's bring our attention to that internal fire in our spines. So again, just seeing the fire, feeling it as a mental bonfire in our minds. Our willpower, willpower and willingness is a spiritual tool. It's a foundational tool that we can use to catalyze that energy and magnetism that are going to bring receptivity of the heart, that are going to bring us closer to that divine attunement, to living in that state of consciousness, knowing that we are one with the divine, of acting in attunement with the divine. So gathering up in your mind all of those things that you can cast aside, all of those things that make you who you are, even the trivial things that feel material-based. Can you give them up? Your computer, your car, maybe your life savings, maybe your home. It doesn't belong to you anyway. It came from the divine. You are an expression of that divine consciousness. Everything you have in life is a tool to help you on your journey towards spiritual growth. Can you cast into the fire those people to whom you feel attached, to whom you love deeply? Any and all self-definitions, give them all into the fire. Feel that fire consuming every last self-expression, purifying the heart. All energy, all concentration, focused at the point between the eyebrows. I am thine. I will love thee, I will seek thee, I will serve thee, I will worship thee with every breath. Okay. Thank you all for joining us tonight. Next week we'll come back together and we'll talk about energy and magnetism, the next step in this mathematical equation toward deeper dynamic attunement with the divine. God bless you.